Okay, here we are, Matthew. Like 2 weeks in a row, we're like on the ball here. This is so good.
That's right.
Okay, we're going to be talking today about, well, I think about COVID-19 and the church and gatherings and all those kinds of things. But before we do, have you heard the new Taylor Swift album?
I've heard a little bit of it.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think I'm not a big Taylor Swift fan.
Right. Yeah.
That's an understatement. I'm not a fan at all.
You don't like her music at all?
Or is it
her lyrics that you don't like?
I don't like her lyrics. I'm not sure I love the... I guess...
It's okay. You just say it, Matthew. Hey, we're all friends here. This is a safe spot.
I don't know. My nieces are really, like, they love Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
So I think I like Taylor Swift because my nieces like Taylor
Swift.
Right.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
you didn't
but
really
if
say
I, if,
right.
if I did not have those nieces,
yeah,
I think I would stay as far away from Taylor Swift as I possibly could.
Wow. That's a really strong. Is there like fundamental disagreements or is it just,
no,
it's just
I don't
not
like
your,
her lyrics.
Just not your thing.
I don't like her style of music. She's just one big production and it feels like it's just not worth my time.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
But I did hear a few of the new songs and it sounds more vibey, chill.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the chill.
Her song with Bon Iver. I don't know if you know, like the, it's called, I think it's called Exile. It's beautiful. Yeah,
yeah.
I actually really like the album. I think Taylor Swift is doing what she set out to do, and I think she's doing it really well. Like, I think she's like the picture perfect of someone who is wanting to be a pop artist and do it really well. So far, I think she's killing it. But I just think like, you know, and I wouldn't call myself
like
that.
Well, she's killing it financially.
For sure. Yeah, for sure she is. And that's, and, you know, whatever, you know, but it's like, even just as far as like, you said the production as though it's a bad thing to have a production, but I actually think like production is there's an art form to production, right? So it's like, you can look at it cynically for sure. And sometimes it goes way over the top, but you go to like, you know, Cirque du Soleil or something and it's a massive production, but it's also like, wow, like this is like, this is amazing. This is done so well. It's beautiful. It's like, it's evocative and engaging, and it makes you think about things. And it's, I don't know. There's something. Maybe there's two sides to it. Obviously, there's a sinister side that can be where it's like, wow, they spent millions and millions and millions of dollars on this thing.
Well, that's where I tune out, because it's if you spend so much on this big produced production thing, and it feels fake. Like it feels like. Taylor Swift to me is like the end of a Avengers movie or a superhero movie.
Right.
It's
right,
like
right,
all
yeah.
of a sudden all the computer graphics stuff starts happening and it's really noisy and loud and things are crashing and it's like, wow, that's really cool, but it's all really fake and it probably took a lot of time and I'm not interested.
Gotcha. Okay. Wow. The new album should
change
your mind.
You're going to want to
edit
this out.
Yeah. No, no. No way. We're keeping it. This is the new album is like, I feel like the new, and here's what I actually think, and this, and we can move on. But like, I think the new album is like, it feels way more honest overall. Like,
okay.
Lyrically, maybe, and definitely musically, where it's like, I think she is showing Matthew it's not all fake. There's some like this is like, and of course it's all produced and I'm sure millions of dollars were spent, but it just feels like, oh, this somehow feels a little more authentic, a little more honest. Like I think it's really well done. Again, I'm not a huge, huge fan, but it's funny when people say, what's the best concert you've been to? One of my best concerts with Taylor Swift, with Ruby. I went like to the Red Tour years ago and it was so fun. It was just like, it was a great memory. So good.
Northangley, I think our worship pastor is a Swiftie.
No, I'm actually not really. I'm fascinated by things done really well. And she does things. She does it really well. She's a gifted artist. And that matters, doesn't it, Matthew? Mm-hmm.
Like a good steak. Something can be done well.
Yeah.
But if it's overdone.
Oh, it's... Then it's like...
It's no good.
Okay, good. Well, I'm sure you all appreciated that. So, okay, we should jump right in here. We are talking about, which I'm sure you probably get this. I know that I get a lot. Like, hey, so when is the church going to open up its doors? And what's the deal? Like, how long? And then, of course, on Facebook, social media, I've got lots of different friends with all sorts of different perspectives. And I have some people that are, like, constantly, you know, putting articles out and saying, like, this is all... Not necessarily a hoax, but it's all like, this is ridiculous. It's over, you know, overplayed, and we should be opening up everything. And like, the mental health challenge to all this? Like, what is the cost of that compared to, you know? And of course, other side where it's like, no, like we need to be like way more cautious and everyone wear masks and we should not be even going out of our homes. You know, it's so, yeah, I'm sure you've probably experienced a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, we're that totally like that's exactly it. That sounds like what I'm seeing too. Just there's a lot of thoughts on the church reopening. And a lot of this has come up since John MacArthur. Some of you may know the name John MacArthur. Right. He's a pastor in California. And he's kind of leading the charge in a movement of churches in California to reopen. Some of you may know the name Charlie Kirk or Jack Hibbs from a Calvary Chapel in California. But like, some of these videos or these presentations are kind of making rounds on why the church should reopen. And in California, the governor, Gavin Newsom, is, I guess, not a friend of the church, as some of the church, this is what they're saying, not a friend of the church. And his measures to close the church have caused lots of angst. Hmm. So, and I think it's basically...
Can I just interrupt? Yeah. Is he closing the church? Like, just to be fair, what's his name, the governor?
Yeah.
Is he saying, like, churches in particular, or is he just saying large gatherings under a single roof? Or is he actually saying, like, only churches, like...
Yeah, I think it's just large gatherings, but I don't know that to be sure. But, like, okay. There are rules in California around large gatherings of people. Right. Okay. So John MacArthur has reopened his church. I think Jack Hibbs has as well, and numerous churches have reopened. And John MacArthur, there's no social distancing, no masks, no anything. Yeah, they're packing them in there. And currently, you could probably Google this tomorrow or the next day, and the story continues. Like, there's lots of animosity there going on with the city of Los Angeles or the county of Los Angeles and his church. So, yeah, it's something to think about. And for us here in BC, kind of wondering, okay, why did we close the doors of the church? And so I want to just have a little podcast here where we chat about that.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, it's and feels very, very timely right now too. I just saw, I think we were talking a little bit earlier about Sean Folkt, I think his name is. He's from Bethel, a Bethel worship leader. And he has been doing these concerts, these outdoor concerts. And I think he's got another like 17 planned across the US where he is, it is in defiance of the... I think for the most part, at least the different states, I guess, are different. But this idea of large gatherings and how obviously there's restrictions on that. You should be wearing masks. You should be social distancing. And they're not, from what I understand, they're not bringing masks. They're not encouraging masks. They're not even encouraging social distancing. They're just here to praise Jesus together. And kind of in defiance of it and just saying like, hey, we don't fear God's called us to this. We are calling on his presence. And I don't know if he's blatantly saying, I have heard other people say like, God will protect us, you know, and we're just going to do this. Which I think is like, it feels to me personally, it feels very irresponsible. I certainly would not do that. And I think it feels like it's like, man, we are called to respect our authorities, if nothing else, right? We're called to respect our authorities. And when you do that sort of thing, it's like, well, this should be for a pretty good reason. Like it makes sense in certain contexts, let's say like Nazi Germany, you know, where it's like, yeah, but we're talking about health, you know, the health of people. And anyways, yeah, I just saw that and I've been kind of paying attention to it and it's a little bit, I find it a little bit wild.
Totally. Totally. And if you, and by the way, and if someone's listening to this and they do feel the church should reopen, I want to let you know that I want to walk through a couple of the good arguments that I think John MacArthur makes and things that we should actually wrestle with. So what I don't want this podcast to be is just a kind of a quick dismissal, you know, why are they reopening the church? Sounds so dumb. Because I think there's some good things to wrestle with. And I want to make just a couple initial comments. First, this really is about churches. So if you're listening to this and you own a small business or you're a school teacher or you're thinking about a place of entertainment, I think each of those carry their own set of circumstances. There's lots of similarity, but I want to just focus on the church, like churches reopening, because there's lots of drama already on schools, public schools reopening totally. And stuff like that. So I want to kind of keep it focused on churches. And secondly, I want to say, I think we would all agree that we're all tired within the pandemic. You know, I think some people have found the pandemic to be helpful with their being more introverted or something, but most people are actually growing quite tired of it, and we have thoughts that go through our mind like, is this the right way to handle things? you know, and maybe some of us have lost lots of money in this whole COVID-19 thing, or we haven't seen friends and relatives in a long time, and we're tired. We mm-hmm. are tired of the pandemic. And I think, you know, I think about myself. You and I didn't become pastors to lead worship or preach into a camera.
Right.
That's not like why we got into this. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing can get old quick. And I think when things get old, naturally things, we begin to question, and we question our government. We're like, is this right? Are they making the right decision here? And so I think it's just natural. So I just want to say it's just natural for us to have some of these thoughts, I think.
Yeah.
And while I think that our church building should not reopen as usual, I really wanted to understand John MacArthur and his argument on why we should reopen our buildings. And notice I'm saying reopen buildings, not the church, because I think there's a big difference between talking about church and the building. So, but I think it's important that we hear his position, again, rather than just kind of dismissing it. And I really like what Tim Keller says. He says, whenever you're arguing with someone, you need to listen really carefully to their argument, and you also need to make their argument stronger. Hmm. I really like that.
It's like that, when
you say it back to them, just say, okay, if I hear you correctly, this, and I would add, to make your argument stronger, this, right? So it actually makes someone feel listened to. So I hope, you know, if someone does agree with John MacArthur here, that you would know that I want to listen to you, and I want to listen to John MacArthur and take it seriously.
That's great. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's just a great way to me, the Tim Keller quote, it feels like it reeks of credibility, right? Like, because you're actually saying, as opposed to the straw man thing, right, where it's like, you're kind of taking the weakest points and then knocking those things down, you know, like you're actually saying, no, here's I think this would even make your argument stronger, and here's why I still disagree with that.
Yes.
But you're it's a respectful way of loving your neighbor in those moments, right? Yeah.
I would like to just say, I didn't do that with you with Taylor Swift at the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah, you didn't, and it hurt. It actually, it did hurt a little bit, and I think probably, I'm guessing there's a few people out there that are feeling a little bit,
I thought it maybe wasn't as serious of an issue. So.
Yeah, well.
Okay. Anyway,
I'm sure, I'll get through it.
Back to the point. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to make John MacArthur's argument strong, and I just want to both share it accurately and try to work through his points.
Okay.
So he had a podcast with Eric Metaxas. Eric Metaxas is an author. He wrote the book on Bonhoeffer. And anyway, so they were in a conversation. So you can find this online if you're interested in hearing it. But John MacArthur makes these points. He says, first of all, this is our opportunity to be heroic. So he definitely frames the issue as a moment for us as Christians to stand up and be heroic. He talks about our First Amendment. Now, I'm using American language, but he talks about our First Amendment as Americans protects us from a government who would keep people away from their right and freedom to worship. So he says we're protected by the First Amendment. He also points out a numeric thing. He says in California, there's 40 million people, 8,500 of which have died of COVID-19. So he says that's 0.002%. I have not checked his math on that, but that's what he's saying. He's saying 8,500 people out of 40 million people, 0.002% likelihood of dying of COVID. So you can make an argument that there's lots of other things that are more dangerous than COVID-19 in California. So he says our church members, quote, they didn't buy the narrative that they were threatening someone's life if they went to church, end quote.
Okay.
So 0.002%, we've got our First Amendment, our right to worship, and we've got this liberal governor who's closing churches down. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to say a couple areas of agreement. So I would say, first of all, John MacArthur said that Sacramento, if you don't know this, Sacramento is the capital of California, but Sacramento does not have the moral high ground, is what he said.
Hmm.
He says they don't have the moral high ground, because listen, his argument is that this state, or those leading us from Sacramento, have advocated for things that are not God's will or heart for the world. And his primary example was abortion laws, right?
Right, yeah.
And he gave the number of babies that every day die through abortion, and he says, listen, am I taking my cue from these leaders in in California.
Right.
And so I guess I would say I wouldn't say it the way he says it. I agree. Like I wouldn't, I'm not necessarily following our leaders because I think they have a moral high ground. So I wouldn't say Victoria and Ottawa have a moral high ground and I submit to everything they say, you know? No, and we'll get into Romans 13 here in a bit, which is about governing authorities. But so I'd agree. I'd say, yeah, no, I don't think any of our capitals have like a moral high ground that we must always bow a knee to.
Right. Yeah.
Secondly, I would agree that he said that we need to live out our theology, like what we understand of God, we need to live that out. And I totally agree. Like, so he said, whatever you believe about God, that should impact how you live. And so, or to flip it, the way we live reveals what we believe about God.
Right.
And I'm like, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
So it sounds like John MacArthur and I might have a different view of God or the gospel.
I've always thought you and him are very similar.
As yeah.
Far as, yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks. No, just kidding. But I think like I could agree with that. So I could agree with those two things. But I'd actually like to make his argument stronger. Mm. I would say what he didn't say, and he could have said, was that being together as the church, that there is something profound that happens as we gather together physically. It's as though the presence of Christ is there. And so sometimes Christians will talk about either two or three are gathered. Some people say that's out of context, but wherever people are physically gathered, we take communion. And when we take communion from that one loaf, which we're not allowed to do in COVID, eat together, right? But when we take communion, it's this powerful picture of one body gathered together, physically together. And the loaf, St. Augustine, in one of his sermons, writes that you and I are both kernels of wheat. We've been crushed, right? That's our repentance. Then we've been gathered together. Then water has been added, the water of our baptism, right, to create a dough.
Right.
And then the fire has come upon us. That's the fire of the Spirit. And it's created a loaf of bread, and by which we partake of the loaf together. It's
That's
this
cool.
Incredibly beautiful picture of one loaf of communion, because we're the gathered kernels of wheat, crushed, but added with water and fire, and we are the one body together. I just think it's beautiful. And so I'm saying, you want a reason to gather? Communion and the church gathered together, the body of Christ together? I'd like to actually say, he never mentioned it, but I'm like, you can make your argument stronger by saying we need to be together, taking communion together, worshiping together, praying together. It's this picture of one body together.
Totally.
Anyway.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's right. Just a quick thought about it is interesting, and I know that's, not that we're going to go down the sort of the political rabbit trail, but sort of the argument of taking the moral high ground. Like, I'm not going to take my, I'm not going to take my moral cues from, our leaders or whatever. And I imagine with someone like John MacArthur, it's probably in particular the fact that this is a very liberal government in California as far as with abortions and stuff. But it's such a, I always find it fascinating when we take that as either a black or white kind of thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, we definitely won't take all of our cues from either side, right? Like whether it's Republican or Democrat or conservative or liberal, but it's always a fascinating thing to say. Like, so that is a blanket that covers everything, right? It covers anything to do with morality. We will not listen to them. And I guess in some ways it's like, well, if you're being consistent with that, it's maybe that's okay. If you just sort of say, hey, I guess the way I would just thinking about this as we're talking about it is like, yeah, with the government, we obviously follow under their authority and we submit to their authority until it is actually pushing up against what we believe as Christians to be right, right? That what we believe.
That's right.
If it's like, you can think of extreme examples. And so I understand, like, with it makes sense in a case like abortion, let's say, or whatever you want to say. But I guess it suddenly gets a little bit trickier when you're talking about things. It's like, well, okay, so this doesn't feel like as high of sort of a high stakes kind of argument, right? As far as it's not as though people aren't dying if we don't gather together. Like, yes, there's a mental health challenge and stuff. But anyways, yeah, it's sort of an interesting thing to say, okay, so because like that as a blanket argument, because I'm like, well, we would never do that with either side. We would never say, okay, no, we're going to listen to our government, you know, tell us exactly what is morally right and what is morally good, and then we'll take our cues from it. I don't think anyone actually does that
right
on either side. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And I think I'd like to actually push back on Romans 13 because I think that is an interesting way of viewing the government. So, so I'll jump into that here in a second.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I think it's a really good question because I think that you're getting at the issue. It's like, how do we as Christians interact with our government? And I think it's massive. So my first pushback to him is I would say, I think John MacArthur and I are framing the issue very differently. So the first idea I want to present here is just this idea of framing an issue. I think he has framed this as a right to worship issue or a right to gather. So it's about rights.
Right, right.
I wouldn't frame it that way. I would say I'm starting off out as a love my neighbor issue.
Yeah.
So I think just from the get-go, we're looking at it through a different lens.
Yes, right, right, right.
But we framed this completely differently. And that actually really impacts the conversation. And I think under that, this is still in my kind of first point here, but the question is this persecution? Because a lot of that, you know, you'll often hear people say, oh, Black Lives Matter. It looks like all those protests, they weren't wearing masks. That's controversial. You know, people say they were wearing masks. No, they weren't. But for me, I'd like to say, like, who cares? Like, that's like my kids going, hey, I've got the right to do this, or they didn't do it that way, or they didn't follow the rules. Right, and so why should we follow the rules? And I'm like, well, it sounds really petty. Right. Yep, it sounds like children. So I don't, that's not helpful to me. I don't want to go down the, you know,
it's my right
route. Yeah. Because actually sports, movie theaters, all kinds of entertainment were also shut down. Now, some of them have reopened in unique ways. Again, I want to focus on the church, but I would like to say if it was only the church that was asked to shut down, then I might go, yep, you can frame that as a persecution issue, right? But when multi-billion-dollar industries have been shut down and are not getting income, I mean, the gods of money and sport and whatever, those have been shut down. So there are angry people out there, right? Yeah. So it's not just the church. So I wouldn't yet is important. You know, I wouldn't yet frame this as a persecution thing.
No.
So I'd frame this as a love my neighbor. That was my first point.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. I was telling you about this, Marian Sinan, a little shout out to Marian Sinan, who posted on Instagram this morning, and I loved it. I love G.K. Chesterton, as you know, who was an author, and I don't know if he was not a contemporary of C.S. Lewis, but he had a big influence in C.S. Lewis's life. But she just had a quote here, and it said, the quote is, to have a right to do a thing is not at all the same as to be right in doing it.
Wow.
Which I really love. Like, I'm like, that's good. Exactly. It's like what you're saying, right? The idea. And even like we read that, you know, Jesus, you know, being the Son of God, didn't cling to his rights, right? He actually instead comes into our mess. He didn't take all the glories and all the riches and stay in heaven, stay with the Father. But instead, he descends to us. Yes. He actually chooses to come into our mess and to almost like to acquire human nature, to be like small, you know,
totally.
And that's a perfect example of that. And so, yeah, I really like what you're saying. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
Cool. So that'd be my first pushback. Let's frame this the right way. Number two, the second thing is just numbers. So when he gets into 40 million people, 8,500 have died of COVID, 0.002%. Okay, first I want to say none of us are experts. Most of us are not epidemiologists. Very few of us have a degree in virology. I know we all think we're experts because we all read an article. I read an article. Good Facebook for you. But we're normal citizens, right? Who in many ways we do have to have some level of trust in those who are governing us.
Totally, yeah.
And I'll get into Romans 13 in a second, but just we do have to trust at some point, and none of us are experts. Secondly, the numbers might be as low as they are precisely because of physical distancing.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So we all saw the situation in Italy, right? We don't want that Italian situation to happen here, right?
For
like
sure.
Hospitals overwhelmed by, and I get it. People will push back. They'll say Italy was different or there's, you know, we're in a different scenario. I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. But again, most of us are not epidemiologists or have degrees in virology. We all think we're scientists. Like, right. We all think get it.
Mm-hmm.
And we all think we know the real science, quote unquote.
Right.
That's what we're all talking about.
Yeah.
So I just want to say, let's actually acknowledge who we are. We're normal citizens who have degrees in other things, and we have to trust. And so Romans 13 does say, Paul says this, let everyone be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established. The authorities that exist have been established by God. Consequently, whoever rebels against the authority is rebelling against what God has instituted, and those who do so will bring judgment on themselves.
Hmm.
Now, it's tricky, and that's a tricky verse, right? Because what about these unholy governments that you know, make you submit to things that are not righteous? And I kind of agree with John MacArthur, right? Like, we only submit if they are righteous laws, if sure. they go with what God, and this is what your point was earlier. I get that. But I think the jury is still out on what is righteous.
Yeah, totally. Right?
Like, if you know, if I'm in China and they are only shutting down churches, only,
mm-hmm.
right? Then I would go, no, I'm not going to submit to that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I'm not going to submit to Beijing and their rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
We are going to assemble.
Yeah.
But as far as I can tell, this is not China currently.
Mm-hmm.
Now, someone might make, hey, it's a slippery slope. It's starting to sound totalitarian.
Right.
Government overreach here. It might lead to a Chinese situation. Okay. Like, I don't want to say that that's not true because I don't know the future. Right. I don't.
Right.
But I will tell you from where I'm standing, when the NHL and NBA and Major League Baseball gets shut down, like, we're not alone. We're not being persecuted alone. And so I would say, up until this point, I'm still willing to follow the governing authorities, Romans 13. I'm willing to trust them. They might be wrong. Like, yeah. we might yeah. find a few years from now, we look back on this and go, actually, COVID-19 was not the thing that it really was. You know, someone might make that argument and go, look, but you know what I want? I want North Langley to be known as that place that trusted their government to love their neighbor, and that we weren't on the leading edge of spreading the virus, and that we were team players. Mm-hmm. Like, I want us to make sure that we were being good neighbors. Again, framing it as a good neighbor thing. So that's the second thing. I just want to just acknowledge that we're not experts.
Totally, yeah.
We do have to trust. We have Romans 13 there. And we're monitoring it, right? Like, mm-hmm. if it ever becomes a China situation, then, yeah, we'll have to kind of say no thank you to the government. But until then, it currently, the way I'm looking at it, it doesn't feel like we're in a similar situation.
Yeah. No, it's really good. I think that's great. I think, and it's funny, I do recognize, like, I know that there are many who have been impacted in massive ways financially in particular because of this. And so I do get that it's I have to watch myself, that it's too easy to just kind of write off the arguments. Like, hey, whatever, just let's follow the rules that are a good country. And it is a good country, right? That's part of the blessing of living in Canada. And yes, it's not perfect. And whatever you think about Justin Trudeau and the government, whatever, you know, like that feels like a different conversation. But we all know, I think, at the end of the day, that we are incredibly fortunate to live in a country that is not, at least, okay, not in general, corrupt. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, sure, there's human brokenness and stuff, and we see things, and yes, we need to be held to account, but we have a voice.
Yeah.
We're very fortunate. And I know that one of the things that I think it was Bonnie Henry that had said a while ago, like, hey, the best case scenario would be that in a few months down the road, we would look back and say, hey, looks like we overextended it. We over-exaggerated how important it was to do this.
Sure.
She's like, that's wonderful if that's how it turns out, that we look back and say, hey, it all worked. And we actually probably went a little too far in terms of our restrictions. But I'm like, I get that, you know? And again, not to minimize the fact that for sure there's a cost to it, and
yeah.
and more for some than for others.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I like that idea of not clinging to our rights, especially totally. Here. Like, not even especially here, but when it's not a clear biblical issue.
Totally.
Yeah.
So if we're going to frame it this way, the third thing I want to say is, let's love our neighbor. John MacArthur said this. He said, people are scared to ruin their witness. I'm quoting him. So, quote, people are scared to ruin their witness, but God saves people. We don't. Christians believe a lie that the world has to like us so that they can like Jesus. Remember, the world will hate you because the world hated Jesus. Hmm. Okay, so I would say, I feel like he's really off the mark on what that means.
That's
because,
great, yeah.
Okay, so I feel like that's just a permission to be a jerk. That's yeah, what that sounds like, right? Like, so
totally.
First of all, okay, I just want to say, if John and I were sitting in a room together, I would say, first of all, if the world hates you, it's because you look like Jesus, not because you're being a jerk.
Exactly. Right? Yeah,
so,
yeah, right, right.
So the real question is, I think the real question is, do you look like Jesus?
Right. Yeah.
So if you are following Jesus and doing what he's asked you to, sure, the world mm-hmm. might hate you. Yeah. But I feel like he's assuming that he looks like Jesus, right?
Right,
so I feel like this is the question. We have to come humbly and go, there are Christians that actually disagree with you, John, like that mm-hmm. that following Jesus actually looks like this. And so he talked often, John MacArthur talked a lot about like people believing this lie that the world has to like us so that they'll like Jesus. What? As though that were wrong. And I'm like, that actually is, Jesus says that. In the Sermon on the Mount, he says, let them see your good works so that they may glorify the Father. So like Jesus actually says, people seeing your good works, mm-hmm. there's a correlation between that and worshiping God the Father. So I feel like John MacArthur just throws that under the bus as though it's like, hey, this is not about people liking us. And yet Jesus is like, yeah, it kind of is. Like, right. like when people, you know, it's not to just kind of like, be people pleasers.
Right.
No. Yeah. And that's where I can agree with John.
He's talking like compromise. If you're like, you know, like the world is, everyone's compromising and totally just.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Giving into culture and yeah.
No way. Yeah. I could agree with that. But I'm saying there is something about us doing our good works mm-hmm. that people will go, oh, we like that. Mm-hmm. We want to be part of that.
Totally.
And so I would say, so do you look like Jesus is really the question. And the gospel, John MacArthur talks a lot about the gospel. And I'm like, okay, well, but the gospel is that at the cross, we see the self-giving love of Jesus, mm-hmm. who lays down his rights, doesn't fight for rights.
Yeah, yeah.
He lays down his rights. He lays his life down out of love for the other. And in 1 John 3:16, we read, this is how we know what love is. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us. We ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters.
Right.
This is the core. Mm-hmm. Like, do your best to lay your life down for others, not just to win some kind of light fake approval, but to actually say, I want to love my neighbor. This is the gospel. The gospel was that God sacrificed his life for me, so I'm willing to lay my life down for someone else. So I feel like he and I are very off on how we're mm-hmm. understanding this, because I do think it's really important that in this we're seen as people who are willing to lay down our rights to love our neighbor. I also don't think he understands the body of Christ. That sounds like a very big statement to make, but to be the body of Christ is not just to assemble together in a room to worship. Although right. I said it's very important,
mm-hmm.
very totally. Important. But to be the body of Christ is we are the presence of Jesus in the world. We are literally the hands and feet of Jesus. Mm. So when the world looks at us, they should see Jesus. So when they look at us, they should see us not clinging to our right to assemble, but living a life of self-giving love. Like what I think the culture should look at us and go, Christians were willing to lay down some of their quote-unquote rights in order to be good neighbors and not spread the virus.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it's so important to get this love your neighbor thing correct.
Yeah.
And that the gospel is a gospel of self-giving, self-emptying love, which is what we're doing.
Totally. Yeah, I really, that's great. And I think it does like, maybe kind of like what you're saying too, is that I think that we limit God, and we sort of say like the only way we're going to meet with God is if we do it in a church building. And I totally agree with you, because I'm like, man, I miss it so much. I miss
totally.
We've had a few people in the room in the last few weeks, which has been so cool. But
yeah.
it's just a small little glimpse of what it has been, and what hopefully yeah. will be in the future again. But it's like God isn't limited to our building, and God isn't limited to. I think that's with the Sean Folt thing as well, with the Bethel. It's not Bethel, because they've actually deliberately said, no, this is not us. This is Sean on his own. He's funding it all. But these worship gatherings where we're calling on the presence of the Lord together. And again, it's just like, okay, that, you know, it's just it seems weird to me that you have to, that it's like God somehow will not show up unless you gather in massive, big gatherings, you
right.
know, unless you, it's like, well, there's probably other ways of doing this that actually respect the leadership that God has somehow ordained, you know, mm-hmm. over us, and still and still be faithful to worshiping the Lord together and calling on his name and experiencing the beautiful presence of Jesus together.
Totally.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I'd love to end with a section from Martin Luther. Some of you know Martin Luther lived 500 years ago.
Martin Luther King. Yeah, yeah, totally. He was a great, no, oh,
is wrong.
That, oh, sorry.
Yeah. So 500 years ago, Martin Luther, he was one of the reformers during the Protestant Reformation. He wrote a letter about sickness and pandemic. And I'd just like to end with just a letter from him. So, you know, John MacArthur may not agree with me, but hopefully he'll agree with Martin Luther.
He likes Martin Luther, I'm sure, yeah.
So he's writing to his friend John Hess in Poland. And so this is 1527, almost 500 years ago. He writes this. He says, "It is even more shameful for a person to pay no heed to his own body and to fail to protect it against the plague the best he is able, and then to infect and poison others who might have remained alive if he had taken care of his body as he should have. He is thus responsible before God for his neighbor's death and is a murderer many times over." It's pretty clear.
Yeah.
But then he says this, that Martin Luther says, this is his plan. He says this, "I shall ask God mercifully to protect us. Then I shall fumigate, help purify the air, administer medicine, and take it. I shall avoid places and persons where my presence is not needed in order not to become contaminated and thus perchance infect and pollute others and so cause their death as a result of my negligence."
Yeah, so that's huge.
We don't want to be a people of negligence.
No.
We want to continue to follow. We'll follow Bonnie Henry and Adrian Dix and keep listening. And
totally.
Yeah.
I was going to say last, but that made me think about and there have been, again, embarrassingly and unfortunately, there have been churches in the U.S. and they're quite documented and they're in the media where pastors have been like, nope, we're going to meet. And then you hear these terrible stories of people dying because of it, right? Like actually getting sick. And pastors, I think there's been a few pastors that have actually passed away from the sickness because of the fact that they refused to obey the laws. And that makes me think about the letter from Martin Luther. And this is great. Yeah, really good. Good conversation.
Well, hopefully it's helpful, and it is something to keep dialoguing about and thinking about. But thanks for everyone for listening.
Yeah, thanks you guys. God bless you. Have a great week.